Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And my co-host, Jim.
Hey.
Good to have you guys here. We had a lot to talk about today, and hope we all follow the code of conduct for this podcast, which we should probably draft someday. But in the meantime, we've got the ITC code of conduct to go over. It is finally put out there, and I now feel what a playtester feels like, because I've seen several rough drafts, and then Ray told me it's out, and I looked at it, and the final draft is very different from what we discussed as a team. So we'll get into that in greater detail, but first, in terms of your updates from Warhammer community, it's been pretty much all Age of Sigmar. Anything catch your eye in terms of being a little fantasy curious?
No, I was just happy that they finally figured out a bloody queue system after all this time.
Yeah, I kept looking at that rule, especially with the numbers and all that stuff. I was like, is this Age of Sigmar or Squad Leader? I'm not sure what I was reading at this point.
No, sorry. I mean, like, the web store has a queue system now for big pre-orders where you queue up in a line and you get like one spot. So scalpers can't just buy 1,000 of everything. Everything's not instantly sold out. So I'm happy about that.
I did not know that. That's amazing. No, I did not know that.
They implemented that in the for the pre-order. So it seems like everyone that wanted one got a box online, which is rare. But I also heard that they screwed over the retailers again, which is not good.
Uh-oh. How so? I missed this part.
So basically what I heard, and whether this is 100% true or partly true, but I heard from very good sources who are retailers that essentially they allowed all the retailers to do they used to be called allocations and now they're called caps. So they allowed all the retailers to put in their pre-orders and then said that the retailers were going to get what they asked for, which was quite a few boxes. But then after the actual pre-orders went live on the GW site and GW realized how many people wanted them from the GW site, they cut the amount of pre-orders for the retailers. So they were like, you don't actually get that many because we want more of them to sell ourselves, essentially. Right. So just typical slimy GW stuff, you know?
Oh my gosh. Oh my, it's just, you know, just, if I want to remember from the last time I actually read through page by page one of their stock reports, I want to say they still more dollars come from the independent retailers as opposed to the GW stores. So it's like, why do you bite the hand that feeds you? I'm just...
Because I think they got a taste of what it's like to be solely an online retailer during COVID, and I think they're trying to keep some of those numbers up.
That's actually a fair point. Oh, well. So, at least the queue system gets the scalpers out of the way. But yeah, again, it goes back to, good grief, who is managing... production and getting things up to market, that supply and demand, you know, supply is not caught up with demand at all at this point. And it's just frustrating. So anyways, on other news, by the time you guys are hearing this, we will have finally heard what exactly the grand reveal is between Warhammer Plus. So that is due for Wednesday the 23rd. It's currently Monday the 21st at 10 o'clock Pacific time. The preview should be Wednesday at 6 British Standard Time. So I'd be curious. I thought it was very striking, maybe happenstance. So Ray, you mentioned a while back, you talked about DC streaming channel and how that was decent content but failed miserably. Remember that?
Yes.
So the number one show on that was a live action version of Teen Titans, not the goofy Cartoon Network, but the actual comic book. Well, this evening, right before coming on to the show, it'll be appearing on either TBS or TNT, one on the Turner Broadcasting. So basic cable is now carrying the show.
I hadn't
so
now's your chance to cash in. The only thing I'd heard about was that was going up on HBO Max.
Yep. So I guess it did well on HBO Max, and it's now worked its way to basic cable. So that gives me the dream.
Show is that?
Teen Titans.
Oh, I thought it was a Warhammer show. Teen Titans, I've never even heard of.
Yeah, so that's
I know what Teen Titans are, but I've never seen it.
Is that a Warhammer show will migrate its way to basic cable, but we'll see.
I can't wait for Eisenhorn to be in syndication on like some shitty 2-bit cable channel in 20 years.
Yeah, just... late. Like, oh, this everybody's got like a VCR, you know, copy of it somehow. So it's bad. Anyway,
I don't think a lot of people have VCRs anymore.
I don't think so either. But just the idea of recording it off the air or something like that would be bad. But I just remember gathering at my friend's house. He had a taped copy of Firefox. I don't know if you guys ever saw that movie. It was some guy took a camcorder and brought it to the movie theater and filmed it over the other guy's shoulder. And you could actually see people's heads walk by at the bottom of the screen. We thought, this is so cool. We're watching it at home. Grainy quality. It was terrible.
Now, those were pretty popular for a while because there was a while when I was just starting college, but torrents became really popular, and a certain amount of the movies that would pop up on those websites would be that kind.
Yeah. Anyway, as we mentioned, AOS has been the pretty much dominating the Warhammer community page, and they offered quite a bit of new rules. Some of them are quite interesting. Everybody likes to look at these from a 40K standpoint because sometimes they try out new rules in Age of Sigmar and get ported over to Warhammer. Any of them leap out at you guys that like to see ported over to Warhammer?
Well, I would have liked to see the pylon rule ported over, which actually was in the last edition of AOS and was a rule before 9th edition. So I was really hoping that would have been in 9th edition. And just to clarify what that rule is essentially it allows you to, when you pile in, you can still pile in if you're base to base. That's the best way to describe it. So you're allowed to essentially slide around models. And I think that it just cleans up all the weird, hey, I'm going to move 0.1 away and then I'm going to move 0.09 away. And then I'm like, you know what I mean? Everyone that plays at a high level does that and knows how that works, but it just feels like unintuitive that it's not explicit. So I would have liked them just to codify that because everyone just does it anyways. That was one rule that I really like to see.
Yeah, that was the one that leapt off the page for me as well. So the idea is that, yeah, you still have to finish closest to, but instead of to the model, to the unit. So although one of your models is base to base, you can move that around and you could actually get back to, I don't know if you can get back to trapping units, but it'd be a lot more intuitive to make that all happen. So
yeah, I also really like the monster rules and character rules. So there's basically heroic actions for monsters that lets them basically do things like extra wounds. I believe there's one that lets them shake the enemy, stuff like that. So I'd love it if both vehicles and monsters in 40K got some sort of like tank shock or some sort of like monster shock where like once they charge something, they get a little bit of an extra bonus and can do a little bit of extra action. I think that was really cool. Characters can kind of heal themselves, that kind of stuff. So I did really like that spice because I do feel like right now infantry is such a dominant part of the game. Just basic infantry, and I'd like to see a little bit more spice into monsters and big things like dreadnoughts, right. Vehicles, that kind of stuff. Sorry.
No, you're hitting it right on the head. I like those. There's one of them, you know, just the monsters, the old days, remember from fantasy when monsters caused fear and terror, and that was they kind of brought that back with those actions. So that was kind of cool. So I wish those were, it would definitely add a little more, especially hit it. I don't want to go back to the days of tank shock. Those were terrible. But vehicles need something. And I think in the current edition, they're not quite as menacing as they used to be. So
yeah, I think my favorite monster rule, though, is that you can destroy terrain with it. So on a 3+, you can basically destroy a piece of terrain. Now, it has to be faction terrain or defensible terrain, so certain types of terrain. And I don't know if that would really work for 40K, but I just think from like a thematic standpoint, I'd love the ability of like a dreadnought to walk up to like a ruin and just smash it open. That'd be really cool.
You know, and that the terrain is definitely a lot smaller, you know, those in AOS, so it would work. I like it. I know there's a mission or a region of the where you fight your battles. You can suck up an objective. I thought that was a little unbalanced, but it was still a similar idea. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I also like there's like a get back into the fight type heroic ability. Where you actually restore lost models. Here we go. Pick one friendly hero and make a heroic recovery rolling 2d6. If the roll is less than the hero's bravery statistics, you can heal D3 wounds allocated to that hero. I was like, oh, he can get himself back in the game. But I could swear there's one that like, he yells at the unit and they gain lost models. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Let's see if I can find it. But it's pretty cool.
Well, one that I kind of like is when it comes to contesting objectives, they take into account if you have models that have the higher wound counts, and those models will count as being than just they are. So, like, for example, the monsters count as 5 models. For the purpose of contesting an objective, then if you've got something that has 5 or more wounds, it's not a monster, it counts as 2.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Kind of helps with OPSEC and the idea that a Lehman Russ is only one model. Sorry. these 3 grots are going to take that objective from you. So, yeah. Well.
And that's still something I think that rubble. Knights get. I still think that Knights need to get something like that. Even if no other faction of 40K gets it, the 2 Knight factions need, especially since this has become an objective gaming.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what they do with Knights at this point. That would be an interesting way to balance them out a little bit. But yeah, those are some of the key rules I was looking at. I was like, huh, that's kind of neat. And so I'm curious to see if we see those ported over or maybe even sneaked in a future chapter, not chapter approved. What's the rules thing they do?
The errata?
I don't know if they still do that. That's what I'm thinking of, yeah. But pretty wild stuff. Also had some fun. A buddy of mine was running a Age of Sigmar tournament and he borrowed some terrain from me. And we were kind of talking about just how different the games are because the terrain didn't quite, was too big for the table, especially because they're just now adopting to the smaller table size that we already have in 40K. But I didn't realize that their objective markers are within 6 inches instead of 3. So it made it a lot harder to place terrain on the table, which I thought was interesting. So to the foam cutter, we could fix that.
Huh.
Yeah, that's why I went, huh, I had no idea.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
The important news of the day comes out, and if you're looking for this, you can log on to frontlinegaming.org, and it's actually right on their front page, so you don't have to dig too far into the ITC, is the Code of Conduct. And these are meant to be rules and guidelines, so players know how to interact with themselves, and also be given guidelines to tournament organizers as well as judges on how to officiate games of Warhammer 40,000. And I kind of joked before, these have been up on the TO Facebook page for quite some time, so I've seen several drafts of this. So when Ray told me it's out, and I looked at this and went, there are some significant changes that I don't remember seeing. So that might be me, might be I missed a change or there, or might be some last-minute changes, but some really interesting changes. And so I think, first of all, is this help the game?
I think to a point.
Where would you say it doesn't help it then?
Well, I think in any case, there's eventually going to be somebody who takes any kind of rule set, even a code of conduct, and finds ways to skirt and go outside of people towards it being. There's always people just try to exploit things.
Which is funny, which is actually spelled out in the code of conduct not to do that, but it's kind of like, what does that mean? Okay, I was kind of curious. Jim, what are some of your hot takes on this?
I understand the concern about the people gaming it, but like ultimately, I don't think that that's going to really be an issue. Like if you think about how many games you guys have played over the last, like let's say per calendar year, how many of them in the past have ever had to call on the code of conduct? I mean, I think in 2019, I probably played like 100 games. And I think maybe 2 of them were like to the point where the code of conduct actually came into play. So overall, I don't think it's going to be a huge issue as far as gaming, people trying to game it. I think those kinds of people are going to be rooted out quite quickly. And kind of people are going to realize like what's going on, and it's not going to, you know, the judges aren't dumb, right? And the TOs aren't dumb. So if someone tries to like pull some sort of super shady stuff, I think it's going to get caught. And most good TOs and good judges will recognize the people being like, you know, nefarious and will punish them for it. So I don't think that's an issue. On the other side, Well, on the same side, I really like it because I think overall, first of all, everyone needs to understand, just like every other thing with the ITC, TOs are able to adopt or not adopt any or as much of these codes of conduct as they want. So if a certain TO doesn't want to run a certain part of it, he doesn't have to. And if there's an incident at their event and they don't want to follow the recommended guidelines for punishment, they don't have to. So ultimately, TOs still have that discretion, which I think is really important for TOs to understand. Just like everything in the ITC, it's completely optional. But what it does do is it provides a really good framework and guideline for new TOs that maybe aren't prepared to deal with certain situations, to create, to implement standardized, discipline across events. And I think for the most part, it hurts enough that it's going to discourage people from, say, not submitting their lists so that they can wait to see, so they can just eat a yellow card and see other people's lists. It stings enough now that people will actually try to not do those things. Cause in the past, getting like a yellow card, if that's all you got, wasn't really, assuming that you're not going to be a douchebag the entire rest of the event and get multiple other yellow cards. There's a lot of getting away with a lot for very little downside. Now you could potentially lose a game. You could potentially lose a standing in the rankings due to like your battle points being reduced, even if you won the game. So I like that there's more teeth to it, and I like that it's recommended. So overall, I'm happy with it. I think that the one thing that I did think was a little bit interesting was the guidelines around bans, and specifically regarding, like, it wasn't quite clear to me if for instance, I'm a TO in Canada, and I say I want a player banned from my region. It wasn't clear if the ban is both, like, for non-FLG events, if the ban is both means that they don't accumulate points, ITC points at all events, or they only don't accumulate ITC points at FLG events. Like, if say if someone gets banned from the ACO, and then I allow them in my tournament in Vancouver, will they accrue ITC points in my tournament? It wasn't quite clear if that's like a broad ban across the entire ITC, where a TO could still allow them to compete, they just won't accrue points. Or if they do get banned, they won't accrue points no matter which event that they go to. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does.
The wording isn't quite clear there. It kind of mentions that it's optional, that the ban is optional, but it doesn't mention anything about the ITC point part being optional either.
Yeah.
So a little clarification would be there. I think would be good there.
Yeah, I'll look from a TO standpoint, because that's exactly where I was going to go. So your earlier point, you played 100 games. How many times has this come up? Twice. As a TO, I can tell you, if we did a 50-person event, that's 25 games, 3 games on the first day alone, you're looking at 75 games. I can still think of like the 2 games where I'm just ready to strangle the player because you know you're wrong. You're just being a jerk. and by the way, I told you, I've made a ruling. Why am I back at this table? So now there's some additional teeth where I can go into, and also gives some guidelines of when I can put my hand into it. And I want to get into that a little bit later. But back to your main question, let's say, we run into some impropriety, and let's say it's even caught on videotape. Let's say like a TJ Lanigan type situation. He's banned from, he'll never play in Arizona again. And for somebody like TJ who travels to a lot of events, big deal, right? Does that mean what does another TO from another region go, there was issues at another tournament, I'm going to factor that into my decision-making process? There's a little bit of that in there. It's not really clear. They're banned from an FAG event. Does that mean he can't accumulate points in my underground fight club tournament now? No, I don't know. And last but not least, how do I get somebody? All right, we've made a ruling. Who do I inform? Do I go through customer service at Frontline Gaming? Is there a direct contact with the TOs? Do I go to the Facebook page? I have no idea. So I've got this guy red-handed using loaded dice, being a jerk, and displaying the rules, and it's a no-brainer that he shouldn't be allowed to play in any future tournaments. How do I deal with this? How does this get back to the ITC? That part is really missing, and that as a TO, I kind of go, raise my hand. What happened here? So
I think ultimately, like, the TO group probably will take care of that. I'm not too, I guess, concerned, but yeah, that's definitely a concern. So. Okay.
So I want to read one right off the bat. This kind of came up to, maybe I'm overreading this, so I just want to make sure I get the thoughts on the group here. Active judging. Judges can actively officiate the core rules of Warhammer 40,000 when they present, for example, by intervening in measurements, die rolls, deployment, etc., when a player is not performing these actions correctly. So the question I have when I read that is, player says, my codex says, I have the following rule. And I go, as the judge looking at the table, I go, you're not even close. That is like the best creative writing assignment I've ever heard. Can I actively, that's not a core 40K rule. So can I actively judge and intervene?
I think so.
So I'll give you an example from a real life one. I had a player who maintained that Mark of Nurgle gave them all the benefits and membership privileges of being Death Guard. So he was basically playing a Death Guard Alpha Legion army. So they had benefited from both Legion traits. You were minus one to hit beyond 12 inches and had disgusting resilience. And I was like, you're not even close. Neither of those are core rules. Those are codex specific rules. So I'm going like, could I intervene as a judge? Because I could see the other player going like, I don't play chaos. So that's something I kind of leapt out. I'm like, that's interesting. Another one I thought was interesting. One of them was like, that's a no-brainer. But then it was a second paragraph that I went, I don't do that regularly. Does that make me a bad person? So now I have all these apologies I need to make to all of my previous opponents. So the first one's obvious. Players must announce their intent, rolling the dice, and apply the outcome. So, Ray, you know exactly who I'm talking about. We've got a player. We call him the Mutterer. So he'll sit there and he'll pick up a bucket of dice and go, I hate this freaking game. Rolls a bunch of dice. Oh, of course. Rolls more dice. All right, take four wounds.
What?
I don't know what he was shooting. I don't know from what unit to what unit are you targeting. I have no idea. All I know is he's unhappy with the die roll. I'm like, where did that come from? So now I can go back and say, nope, you didn't declare it ahead of time. Void, reroll everything. Though I might take the four wounds. That might be a bad roll. So that seems like a no-brainer. But it was interesting. It also applies to movement. And I sometimes will put like one model out to see if I have line of sight and I go, I'm not going to make it. I better move them back. I can't do that. I have to announce I am moving around the corner with intent to put you in line of sight. I have not been doing that. I feel bad.
But, you know, it makes sense. And I think there are actually plenty of times where I actually see people do that. They don't always do it, but there are plenty of instances where it's a good idea, especially when models into like charge range to get that. Cause when you do that, you can get the confirmation from your opponent. So for instance, I think it was when you were playing Mark a couple weeks ago, Game Shop, and he was talking about how he was moving his models in to where he could get a charge on. When you do that and you say, okay, I'm measuring that I'm this far away, you get confirmation from your opponent that that's still kind of what role you need. And later when you actually do that, you'll have your opponent saying, well, no, you needed this. Well, if they try that, you can say, well, just a second ago, you agreed with me that this is all I needed.
That's a good point. True. I'm thinking more of some of those intermediate moves in between. You know, we're going to shuffle this unit onto the objective. He definitely didn't declare, neither did I. I am moving them 6 inches to the right so they can hold this objective. I don't say that on a regular basis, so I guess I need to get better at that. Jim, am I overthinking this? Because I know you heard you saying about guys that use like dice to measure how far they have to go before they move models.
Well, I think this comes like, so I had an incident at LVO, I think 2018, where an opponent who I will not name tried to weaponize the code of conduct against me. So basically, the rules as written are pretty clear as far as like declaring intent, declaring just about everything. And I think there is like, so I don't even want to talk about the example, but basically what happened was I had a demon prince. I put dice around his original spot to mark where he was so that I could see. And then I flew him over to a ruin. And then I took my hand off so I could spin him to see if I could fit him under the ruin because his wings were quite like large, and I was thinking if I spun him like 60 degrees, I could then push him under.
Right.
And literally the moment I took my hand off to spin him, he said that now that the model is placed and that I can't move him further.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of a jerk move.
Yeah. And so I called the judge. Obviously, I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I literally just took my hand off so I could rotate it. Because the rules, as they were written, basically says that once you remove your hand off the model, it's placed. And even though I placed dice on his original location, he was like, no, you can't pick up models more than once, basically. So he tried to I ended up calling actually John. You know, he ended up basically ruling in my favor and saying the guy was being a douche. But those are the kinds of things where I feel like are few and far between. I don't think many people play like that. With that said, I think ultimately, as much as the code of conduct is a set of rules, it is also a set of, I guess, guidelines as far as best practices. And so when it comes to a lot of these types of things, like declaring intent, declaring moves, that's actually the best way to play 40K, this kind of verbalized intent where everything that you do, you're communicating with your opponent as you move, as you do actions, so that they understand, whether that's telling them, talking them through a shooting phase. So it's like every weapon, you're making sure they know what you're rolling for, what your hit roll is, what your wound roll is. If you get rerolls, why you get rerolls, to when you're moving things before you move them, to kind of talk them through, especially if you're trying to do like a not straightforward move. Like obviously if you're just picking up some Marines and moving them 6 inches, you probably don't need to like be like, I am moving these Marines 6 inches. But if you're say moving these Marines, you want to check to see if they fit somewhere before you actually move them. Those are the kinds of things that I think it's just really good etiquette to practice and to verbalize always, so that there is no confusion and there isn't any sort of these feel bads and things. Now, I think ultimately, you know, it always will come down to a judge's discretion. So if you feel like someone's trying to game the code of conduct or weaponize it against you, I would just call the judge and explain the situation. And I think for the most part, the judges will recognize when someone is being like extremely picky. And I think that also is, and we'll talk about it later, it kind of goes along that line of like angle shooting, which is like trying to twist the rules or twist the code of conduct to gain an advantage, which is essentially what you're trying to do. I think that goes both ways.
Okay. So yeah, I think I need to just do a better job of communicating my movement. So I have not been doing, but I see the point there, because my intent is to move onto this and try to get the entire squad into this piece of terrain. My opponent goes, I don't think they're going to fit because of model height. All right. Can I place two or three models with to see if it'll fit? And if we agree, then great. If not, I can move them back. Yeah, that's fine. Rather than just moving my models, he goes, dude, what are you doing? All right, I can see that. Okay. We actually had an incident, actually, at the shop my last game. We had a unique terrain piece and a unique model interaction. And I kind of went, okay. I agreed to a placement of a model and didn't realize the bigger ramifications involved. And I went, you know what? He's not wrong, but good God, I Mike sure when the terrain that I make will not be made like this piece of terrain. So that was pretty crazy. Basically, it was a 2-foot by 1-foot ruin that we put in the middle. And it's fun to put down because it's like, you know, plop. You've got the entire, you know, table is almost set up. Because it's a single piece of terrain, if he enters it, then he can shoot out. You know, or based on the new rules, obscuring rules, he can shoot out to any part of it. So basically, he pretty much negated the entire center board of line of sight blocking terrain. And I was like, oh, that was bad. Okay, so watch those base sizes, folks.
There is one thing that I wanted to point out, which I thought was really interesting, which is that if you, which I think is a bit contradictory to like the overall messaging that you get a lot from a lot of TOs. So oftentimes, you know, after an event is over, you get a lot of stories about XYZ person that cheated you, or this person that played illegally, or yada, yada, yada. And what is it that the TOs always say you should have done?
Should have called the TO at the time of the infraction.
Yeah, right. They say you should have called the judge, you should have called the TO. But now, if it is a more complicated situation and they have to make a comprehensive ruling, both players suffer on the time. So it's kind of like if you're low on time and you think that there's something contentious happening, there's almost this like disincentive to call the judge and just to kind of move on with it, because both players now equally share any sort of time penalty based on if the judges have to get involved in something that's more than just a quick ruling.
Right.
So if there is something like the incident I described where literally I had to sit there, explain all of the steps I took, including my dice, what the guy was doing, blah, blah, blah. And then he had to sit there and Like, it wasn't like, it wasn't just a rules question or like an interpretation. It was like literally like a whole, you know, scenario that had happened. And sometimes these things can be quite complex and might require multiple, you know, either rule checks or opinions, et cetera, et cetera. It kind of discourages that, which I think is a little bit counterintuitive to like everything I hear from every TO and every judge is you should have called the judge, right? So like, don't after the tournament complain that, you know, so-and-so screwed you or so-and-so, you know, messed up, you should have called the judge. And now it's like, well, if you call a judge and it's not, and you miscalculate and maybe it's a bit more complicated and say they have to do some digging, all of a sudden, both your time gets penalized and, you know, you might not always necessarily have that much kind of time to give up. So
it's funny you brought that up. That was actually one of the advice of my old, actually my former co-host, good old Neil from the 11th Company. That was one of the things he advocated a lot. Do I want to fight this rule or is the time loss worse than the penalty I'm trying to fix? And several times he felt that time is not on my side. I will just go with it. And can I overcome that obstacle rather? Because I can't overcome the time obstacle. The other part of me, I read this and I go, okay, I know I've done this as a TO. I'm trying to, and it's always round three. Round three, the claws come out. You know, round one, everybody's like, hey, Warhammer buddy, how are you? By round three, people are ready to gouge each other's eyes out. God forbid.
Especially if they're 2-0.
Well, actually, the opposite. It's the 1-1 guys.
Oh, really?
The difference between going 2-1 and 1-2 is like those guys are ready to rip each other's eye. And those are the ones where I get, because they're not quite following the code of conduct. They may not have as much experience. So in those situations, so that the testosterone's up a little bit, the stress is up a little bit. Those are sometimes, then I got to put out three fires at the same time. So, and sometimes I'm like, okay, I will get you in fair time. Both of you need to pause your clock and I'll get there so I can make a comprehensive ruling, which then usually screws up the, when does the round end? How come they're still playing? And then that's where I raise my hand. Hey, this, I made a ruling. They could pause the clock until I can get over there. But to your point, though, yeah, if you're at even a larger event, finding a judge in 10 minutes just before the ruling's even started may take a while, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I had a tough time finding judges at some of these larger events, you know, the super majors. And I was watching closely with ACO. It seemed like there was a one judge for every 15 tables seemed to be the standard they're using, which is better than most tournaments. So I was like, okay. Maybe that's what we need to look at, more judges per table, for that very reason, that you need to be able to respond to issues quickly and succinctly. And if you need comprehensive, how do you fix that? So that's a very good point, though. I appreciate that. We touched on this a little bit earlier. Players must bring an official copy. That's the wrong one. I'm sorry. But list building. First, we got to bring all your rules. Actually, I did want to talk about this. Bring an official copy, digital or printed, of all requisite rules for his or her army. If they cannot show a digital or printed confirmation of a rule, then he's considered wrong in any rules disputes involving the judge by default. Third-party list building applications and unofficial printouts of rules are not considered official sources of information. And failure to bring rules to the event will result in a yellow card with a penalty at the judge's discretion. So we talked a little bit about the lack of getting rules out to the general public and lack of, you know, GW not having digital copies available for sale anymore. What's an official copy at this point other than a printed rule book?
That is it.
So like you can't have a photocopy or like a picture of a page. It has to be the actual physical. Is that what, or are they saying that you can't say have like the page from Wikipedia printed off?
So that's a very good. So Wikipedia, that's not an official source. So I would say no. But if you had like a pirated digital PDF of the, you know, somebody took pictures of the codex, does that count? I don't know.
I mean, that's literally all I have.
Oh, I'm with you. Absolutely. And as a TO, that's what I'm ruling against you on. I'm not carrying 27 codices with me. I have them all on one tablet that fits in my back pocket. So it'd be kind of like, oh, is that in Russian? Sorry, I'm not going to allow that as an official source. What are you using, Tio? But it doesn't matter what I'm using. You know, it's a little, you know, superficial on my part. But Yeah, I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to figure out what... I mean, I could definitely see at a GW event. They're like, you don't have a hard copy of the Codex. You can't. But I'm not... Yeah, I'm not lugging around 40 copies of books from 3 years ago to make rulings.
Yeah, I mean, it was... It sounds as dumb as the Adepticon used to have a policy like that where, like, you literally couldn't... They wouldn't accept rules if it was on your cell phone. Even if it was like the official codex.
Really?
And yeah, it was like the dumbest rule. I think it was just because Jason Lippert didn't want to look at people's cell phones. But like if it was on a tablet, it was fine. So like it was completely inconsistent and incoherent. And it kind of reminds me of that where it's like, yes, I know that it is a exact picture of the book, but since it's not a official source, I will not accept it. But then it's like, what, that you're going to accept the GW app, which is full of typos anyways? Like it doesn't...
I think it's an interesting point that, you know, regardless of how people are going to on the idea of what a unofficial printout is, or whether or not using a pirated digital copies, if someone has the rules in like the official publication with them, and they just don't want to constantly have to pull those books out of bags, I think that, you know, just having a printout of the important pages should be allowed. It's like, hey, I've actually got the book here. I just don't want to have to keep pulling it out and putting it back in this bag. So this is a printout of my book.
Okay, so I will bring up an example. And Ray, you were at this tournament because you and I were teammates in a 2v2 tournament. One of our players was trying to weaponize the clock by asking me questions about my codex. Every time I touched a model, like I could not get through my movement phase, and they weren't like related to movement. They were like, what's his leadership? Okay. Like, you're going to have to wait. So finally I just literally threw the codex at him and says like, you can have it for the rest of the game. I know my army. So if you have another question, stop wasting my clock. And he just kind of looked at me like, wow, you're a dick. And which I was, but that's another issue where it's like, what do you have this? What about that? What about this? I'm like, and it was days before chess clocks. So there's enough of, which brings back to the, I'm looking at, you know, the next topic, which is what's supposed to be on a list and what is when you submit a list and what you bring to the tournament for a list. One thing that does not stay is you have to put stats on there, like the old Army Builder program. So I don't know, maybe that was just one thing that it's, I mean, that game was what, 5 years ago, Ray? And I'm still hot about it.
The team tournament? Yeah, sure. Yeah, somewhere around that time.
Yeah, you'll love this, Jim. This is back before I started running tournaments. This is actually the tournament that put me over the edge. It was like, I'll start running tournaments to help this with Donnie-ness. It was a team tournament, and we got Ray was playing, you were playing Chaos Space Marines, maybe Thousand
Suns? No, I was playing Necrons with the 5th edition Codex, yeah. Still.
That's right, and I was playing Demons. And we ran up against a death, I think it was a Death Watch dark, like basically the perfect fluff matchup against us. We're like, oh, he gets like, it was Grey Knights and something. So he got everything plus one against Demons. And then he had another thing that would just kills Necrons. And I was like, are you kidding? And it was a mission where each player, you rolled randomly. And one player from each team deployed normally. And the other one's entire army started in reserve.
It's Deathwing, that's what it was. Crap.
Yeah, it was Deathwing. So he rolled, and then of course he has all those advantages for deserve. So basically on my turn two, I was outnumbered by 1,000 points. I'm like going, okay, this is not gonna be fun. And then on top of it, this guy's being a total jerk of what's their movement? What's their can they move over? I'm like, here, read the damn codex. Go away. Let me finish my movement phase. Oh, I hated that. Oh, that guy. I haven't seen him since, though. So.
Well, no, you know, when you bring in a bunch of Gundams and try to pass them off as Riptides, people stop wanting to play. Hey, listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can to just swap out those boxes, and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy, the boxes help protect your models, and when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
That's true. All right, let's talk about list submissions here. Jimmy mentioned it earlier. If you don't turn it in, some players are willing to take the yellow card just to get the competitive advantage. They've addressed that. So first and foremost, list formatting must include total points of the army, total points of each individual unit, and a disaggregation of points for each upgrade available to the unit. So it sounds like they're trying to follow the GW version. Command points and detachments must also be clearly delineated. For purposes of reserves, each unit must also have its power level rating clearly marked. The army's warlord must be clearly identified, and it should have its warlord trait. If it is fixed, such as a special character, chapter tactics and special detachment benefits must also be clearly identified in each detachment. Handwritten lists are not acceptable without the judge's permission.
Which I don't know if they're like, I don't know which judge was ever allowing those. Like, if someone give me a handwritten list, I'd tell them to go f.
There's still people were taking pictures of their handwritten lists and uploading them to PCP. That was still a thing at several tournaments. I hadn't seen it in a while, I'd say, but it as early as last season, I still saw it. I was like, you got to be kidding.
I just don't understand why, like, and maybe I'm like too much of a stickler, but like when things like Battlescribe exist for free on both mobile and Android and PC and Mac, I just don't see any reason why you can't just be like, you must submit your list in Battlescribe format.
The only time I ran into it with a legitimate, I just don't want to bother or I don't want to be burdened by, was a player was trying to get fluff points. And they had written their list like on a parchment, so it looked like an imperial seal and calligraphy and all this other stuff. I'm like, that's great. Submit that for best appearance. I need an official copy for playing the game. And they're like, oh, you know, thought I was demeaning and the worst thing that ever happened to the hobby. So anyway, failure to meet the deadline for an event for FLG events, that's 1 week prior, will result in not only an automatic yellow card, but as Jim alluded to earlier, you will receive a 20-point reduction to your score on game one. So you think 20 points, that's enough of a sting to make you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, that's enough. That's a big enough swing. I mean, if you're a top-level player, you can probably overcome that. Like, say I'm going to beat someone 90 to 50. Mm-hmm. Well, beating them 70 to 50 isn't the end of the world. But I think now that there's actually a penalty, people are not going to risk it. Because what if I don't get like a seal in the first round, and now all of a sudden it's a decently close game? Am I willing to lose it based on that 20 points? Probably not. So I don't think, I think the players that would have maybe taken advantage of this are going to be disincentivized enough now to not do it. But it's also not so devastatingly disadvantageous that like, if for whatever reason your list doesn't get in on time, you've lost the whole event. Like, I think it's a good balance of like penalty, I guess, I feel.
Okay. I was trying to think about it. 20 points. So that's 20% of out of 100. But then you're like, okay, what's the average margin of victory? Yeah. I was just like, is 20 points enough? I was like, it's probably a good start. So definitely wanted to get your guys on take on that as well. This I thought was interesting. Any model or unit not present on the player's list may not enter the table at any time. And any players found using models or units that are not listed or incorrectly listed will have committed a yellow card foul on the first offense. I thought this was a little light.
What does incorrectly listed?
I was focusing on not on the list. Incorrectly listed, I could say maybe there's a weapon options aren't there. I could say maybe unit size is wrong. Here's a 10-man unit. Well, your list says it's a 5-man unit. That's incorrectly listed. For some reason, the yellow card to me felt a little light. So, but I'm thinking of the... Sure.
Is the ITC going WYSIWYG now? Because
hasn't it always been WYSIWYG? As far as I was concerned...
I've never gone to high enough in the tournament scene.
Yeah. As far as I was concerned, outside of grenades and like small relics and stuff, like if you say your model has a las cannon or an autocannon, then it should have a las cannon autocannon. So the only exception I've ever seen to like true Rizzywig is like the various marine bolters, because the only difference is like the magazine and no one knows what the f- which one is which anyways. But like outside of that, almost 90, like I personally wouldn't be happy if an opponent showed up with a non-Wizzywig army. Now, would I go to the TO and report them? Probably not. But if, you know, if someone did report them to the TO, I wouldn't blame that person. I would say, well, these are the rules and Wizzywig's the law of the land. So I don't know. And, you know, there's a reason that I magnetize everything. And I personally do like, sometimes I have extra models, for squads just so that I can have war gear options. So like if someone showed up with an army of like guard with plasma guns and they all had actually melta guns, I don't think that's okay personally. Now, does that mean I'm going to go complain to the TO and be like, "Nah, the TO, like this guy doesn't know what he's like"? Probably not. Just especially if like the guy's not a, you know, he's like, you know, seems apologetic or just really like humble about it. But if someone else was like, "Well, I don't like that," or if the TO just noticed on his own, I wouldn't blame them for punishing that or like penalizing that person, because ultimately we need, you know, for me as a, like for someone that's maybe has more experience, it's easy enough for me to remember that. But if you're a new player, you know, maybe you don't, you know, it's not easy for you to like, you know, you don't maybe know the difference between a melta gun and a plasma gun. And so could be complicated.
So to answer Ray's question, yes, they are WYSIWYG and they've upped the penalty. So if the first time you play a game with non-WYSIWYG models and it's called, there's a yellow card and a 20-point deduction. And the second issue, if this continued across more than one game at the same event, it will result in a red card. And also, if you have to make changes to your list because models are illegal or don't have the war gear, you can't say they just don't have a melta gun even though he's modeled with one, you actually have to take the model out of your list. You can only fix these problems by subtraction is the new rule. So, I mean, I'm with you, Derek, Jim. Even if it is a, I'll say a try-hard player, I go, okay, which ones are the plasmas again? All right, yeah, they're not plasmas now. Okay, now you're removing a model. Is that still the heavy gunner? Is that the special weapon guy? I have issues with that. Also, I don't know how much that is just, well, I spent the last 48 hours staying up all night trying to make sure all my guys were WYSIWYG. Why didn't you? You know, that's more of a, but I can remember one game where the guy painted all his models the same color. It was a Tyranid army, but these units over here have a different ability from this unit over there. And I was like, how am I supposed to tell these guys apart? One had Feel No Pain, the other one had Furious Charge. Like, all right, I will mark your models then. And I put my dice next to those units so I could keep track of them. That was a pain in the neck. So the rest of it is pretty straightforward, but I wanted to bring up one last topic as we are running a little long tonight, and apologize for that. The interesting, you mentioned calling the judges, we talked about that, you're emphasized to call the judges, but it could be detrimental to the time, we talked about that already. But one thing I thought was interesting, and this came up in a rough draft, and I went, so if you get a yellow card or a red card, or any other infraction listed against you. And they give all kinds of different reasons for that. Most of them are what we've heard about and bans and whatnot. Not only does it affect you as a player, but also affects the club you're on. So for example, in the course of playing events, it may come to pass that a specific team club has members on it that have repeatedly caused issues at events, including individuals or as a group. When the ITC has determined that a team or club or any number of its members have been consistently behaving contrary to the ITC code of conduct, the ITC will inform the club, the ITC tournament organizers, that the club has been given one of the following labels. That's right, folks. Your consequences will affect all your teammates. The first one is a warning. It lasts for a minimum of 6 months from the date it was issued. ITC suggests players on that team with a warning proceed with caution at events. Not sure what that means, but I guess you're being... And then the next one is on watch. Members of this team that has been labeled on watch should closely be observed during events by the TO and judges. It is the ITC's recommendation that any breaches of code of conduct by the members of this team be reported to ITC regional representative. Oh, great. More job for me. This label lasts 12 months from the date it is issued. And it upgrades further to yellow status. ITC recommends that all members of the team on yellow status or who were members of said team in the last 12 months prior to the date the label was applied start the events with a yellow card and a verbal warning from the judges. And then banned. You can actually get your team banned. This team is banned from ITC competition and may never reform under the same name or with its composition more than 25% of its former members. Furthermore, all members of this team will be stripped of their ITC points for the current season and are banned from competition from the ITC for the next season in its entirety.
Is this an issue?
I love it.
You love it? Sort of. So, Jim, you love it. What do you like about it?
Well, it holds teams accountable for the conduct of their players, which I think is a good thing. Like, if teams want to compete in the ITC for team points or best team or whatever, then they should also be subject to the conduct of their players. So
I would agree with that. Ray, what do you think?
Yeah, I honestly think it's good for team members to try to help make sure that they keep themselves accountable. I was just surprised.
I like how there's, yeah, there's been some issues with it. And I think also with the advent of these mega teams, like Team Texas, not to blame them. We are guilty of it here in Arizona as well. We linked up our two of our largest teams together with the sole reason of not only sharing resources, but also I don't want to drive to Utah or Los Angeles or wherever else and play a guy play every night on Friday. I didn't drive. I want to play other people. So make sure if we can, so if we're all on the same team, that minimizes our chances that we pair against each other in the first round. Team Texas did the same thing. And I think their roster is huge. And now it's interesting because now you're exposing yourself to one player getting a yellow card, putting the team on watch. I thought it was smart, too, that they said, hey, as soon as that guy gets a yellow card, cut him from the team. Well, there's time limits. That yellow card doesn't disappear for a while, even if the player does. So I was like, well, that's not a bad... Somebody thought that through. But I think it'll be interesting to see how teams react. And I think to Ray's point, the first time we see that applied to a team, and what does that involve?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully teams, like, you know, now I can ruin the three or four teams that I play on, which is great, and just drag them to the mud. No, but seriously, I think you know, this is, I guess, the team happy rule, which I don't know if it exists anymore, but it sounds like they had some pretty bad behaviors in years past, so... Hopefully this means team captains and will be smarter about holding their players accountable. And ultimately, I think what it does is it creates more pressure from the community and their teammates for players to correct themselves. So, you know, not every player is part of a team, and especially people that are probably getting these things are not generally going to be loved or welcomed on a team. But I think it creates a little bit of pressure from teammates to hold their maybe shadier members accountable.
It's funny you bring up Team Happy because that's exactly it. There was a lot of notoriety around some of their players, but they also still got big results. And I think that was at a time when the code of conduct was still, you know, event by event. And, yep, okay, I got yelled at. Big deal. We still got 400 ITC points. On to the next. You know, I think that was kind of the attitude back then. Now this kind of gets nipped in the bud.
Yeah.
Jimmy said he had a wanted to say something about angle shooting. So I'd never heard the phrase until this code of conduct. So
me neither.
Okay. So it's not just me. All right.
No, I thought it was like some sort of like gameplay maneuver at first. I was like, oh, and then I read it and I was like, oh, I feel like it's something that is like from like Texas or something. It sounds very like anything involving shooting, I feel like, is probably a Texas term. So
I first thought it was some sort of line of sight thing, you know, where you can, you know, I see the back antenna of your model. Oh, cool. They're finally going to address this. Nope. That's not what it was. All right. Never mind.
So apparently I just Googled it. Apparently it is a term that comes from poker. So it's basically any behavior outside the rules that is intended to give an unfair advantage to one or more players.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. So it's a type of cheating, but it's like more like collusion or like, yeah, so underhanded unfair methods to take advantage of inexperienced opponents,
which also bleeds.
So it's like marginally illegal things, but neither ethical nor gentlemanly, not in the spirit of the game. So that's,
I feel like you need proof, an index of terms for angle shooting alone.
Yeah, I think this is something, and hey, you know, Salty John, if you're listening, This would be a great topic for its own podcast this week after week. Here's an example. Here's how to handle it. Kind of like a TO's training course. And I'll be your first Patreon. Hell, I'd even help. John, if you hear me, I will help you make those videos. I would do this in a second. Because there's a lot of stuff of, yeah, it makes sense. How do you execute this as a TO? That's still a big question. And you just don't get a lot of practice until you're in the midst of it. So unless you're like refereeing random Friday night games. So, Jim, you're playing tomorrow at your league. I'll fly up and referee your game. How's that sound?
Sure. I was thinking of streaming it, but I'm too lazy to get this thing set up. But definitely my next game.
That's pretty awesome. Anything else that you guys missed, or I may have missed on the code of conduct that's worth discussing tonight?
The only thing that I said this at the start, but actually one of the things that I think that should happen is I know Reese's and FLG's approach to the ITC has been very kind of libertarian, where it's like, take the parts you like, don't apply at all, do what you want, run your own rules. But I personally think that they should just say that if you want your event to get accrue ITC points, then it has to follow the code of conduct. No questions asked. Like, I don't think that TO should, I think like, and if you don't want to be a part of the ITC, that's fine. And if you don't want to follow the code of conduct, that's fine. And you know what the outcome of that is, which is no ITC points. And you can still run an event and do your own thing and not be part of it. But I think the scene as a whole and ITC as a whole has gotten big enough now that I feel like the benefits to implementing the code of conduct league-wide across the entire ITC uniformly outweigh the few grognar TOs that are going to grumble over like some of the guidelines, I guess. So I really think that they need to take a little bit of a firmer hand, and I think that's for the betterment of the game, because if you look at things like most leagues, they do have codified constitutions and sets of rules that it's not really like choose your own adventure there. So I do think that they should have a much harder stance on the code of conduct for events. And what that does is it gives players the confidence that when they go to an event, that they have like a document that has their back, right? That right. They know that they're going to an event and they know that they're going to have this code of conduct in place, and that's going to kind of protect them from predatory players or cheaters or whatever. But I would hate it for someone to go to an ITC event thinking that, you know, that they have that, and then the TO arbitrarily decides he doesn't want to use parts of it, and that causes players to then go in game or cheat or abuse those areas that the TO is not adopting. And then ultimately, if a TO is found to have not like followed the ITC code of conduct because he just didn't like it, well, then that TO, just like the player, might, you know, their events would no longer be eligible for ITC points, et cetera, et cetera. So I just think they need to have a little bit of a firmer hand, because ultimately I think that the code of conduct is only good for the player base and good for the game, and especially for new players and, you know, players of all skill level. But essentially I think it gives a lot of newer players a little bit of a, I guess, security when it goes to events. I saw a tweet today from a newer player that hadn't really even seen anything like the code of conduct until they re-released it. Like, they hadn't really, they didn't know it really existed. And they're very like happy that things like the spirit of the game, things like that these measures were in place, and it gave them a lot more confidence and a lot more like, to go to events and not feel intimidated, because they knew that there was rules to play by, and they weren't going to get bullied by, you know, or angle shot by good players. So personally, that's just my opinion. Now, do I think that's going to happen? Probably not, but I would have liked that.
I would love to talk to somebody who is against the code of conduct just to hear what is it that about this, that why would you not implement this?
Freedom.
I guess
that's like the really only excuse,
right?
I mean, I could see a TO maybe disagreeing with a point here or there and maybe not liking it, but I mean, with any rule set, you're not going to like everything. And I think as a whole, it's a beneficial thing. So yes, as a TO, you might not like a small part of it, and you might disagree with maybe the severity of a penalty or the direction of a ruling or whatever, and that's okay. No one's saying that you have to agree with everything 100%, like it's the Holy Bible. But I think the intent and the point of it is that it is there to protect your players from each other, essentially. And I think that provides, and I think the ITC needs to kind of be serious about that. They need to take that seriously. And that means implementing it like as a kind of a non-optional part of the event. Just like you can't run a two-game ITC tournament or a ITC event that has no painting requirement. Those are things that they demand and they require. So I hope that this is right. So those are parts of the ITC. So for me, it's like, this should be part of that too.
Yeah, that really hit home with me for a second there. Yeah, they're more stringent on you have to be at least 1,000 points in three rounds than but you can still act like a jerk if you don't want to follow these rules. Right. That's weird. Yeah, you're right. Ray, anything else we missed?
Oh, also just one last thing. I would have liked to seen a little bit, sorry, just quickly, Ray, before you jump in. I would have liked to seen a little bit of language on TO shenanigans, because we've seen a lot of TO shenanigans. No, and I'm serious. Like, we've seen people with the fake players, a bunch of people sign up and they all drop, the 0-0 scores, the ties, the 100 zeros, like all these kinds of weird.
Right. That's not in there.
All these weird oddities around like people scoring. There should be some more guidelines on like I would have liked them to implement some stricter penalties. Like, hey, if you're a TO and you're caught fluffing your event roster size, there should be some repercussions there as well. So I would have liked to seen a little bit more harshness there as well. But
I'm trying to remember where those rules were laid out, because they were written down at one point. I wonder if that was in an older code of conduct or was there somewhere else. I have to look that up. That's a good point. Yeah, there's a lot of those shenanigans go out there. So, Ray, anything else that you think we missed in the code of conduct?
No, I think anything I would have said, Jim just covered there on that last bit.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ray.
It's all good.
Good coverage, guys. Appreciate that. Yep. All right. If there is anything you guys agree or disagree with the code of conduct, leave it a message in our Facebook page. You can see that posted with each of our episodes. We are running a little long on time, so we're going to skip over the one tournament there was this past weekend, but we wanted to get to at least the ITC top 10 as they present this Monday. So in 10th place, John Lennon with 1,073 points. 9th place, Anthony Vanella. 8th place, Nicholas Wenker. 7th place, Ben Sherwin. 6th place, friend of the show, Colin McDade. 5th place, James Keeling. 4th place, Nick Dalavati. 3rd place, Mark Hertel. 2nd place, Brad Chester. And in 1st place, now I believe it's 7 weeks in a row, Sean Naden with 1,284 points. All players have indeed played 6 events so far this season. So that is your top 10 for this week. Gentlemen, start with Ray. Are you doing another one of your one-man shows this week, Ray?
At least one. I'm going to talk a little bit about tournament sizes. I'll probably record that tomorrow, and then I'm sure I'll Warhammer Plus once it's announced on Wednesday.
Sounds good. Jim, what do you got going on the Vessel Network?
So on Thursday, I have the Best Overall Show Returns with... I don't have a co-host actually for that show yet, so if you guys are interested in co-hosting...
we'll talk after the show.
Okay. And then, Friday and Wednesday, I'm actually doing a hobby stream, an extra hobby stream, and I'm going to be doing some 5 o'clock shows, and that's about it. It's a pretty chill week this week. One thing I was going to mention is I actually just looked myself up on ITC rankings, and guess who has not even existing on there? Me. So a lot of people were in various places were hating on me for my ITC ranking, but you'll be happy to know that I have not logged a single event in ITC this year, thanks to COVID-19. So hopefully, though, that's about to change. I have my first event coming up in maybe as early as August. So that's exciting. But for the most part, I've basically given up on the season. So I think I'm going to keep my travel to a minimum outside of the LVO. And because there's just no point in chasing the ITC rankings this year, but going to try to get into shape for next year. So
good idea.
Maybe take another run at it, but who knows?
You never know.
We'll see how that Thousand Suns book pans out.
I'd be curious how that all turns out. Yeah. Any word on when that's being released at this point?
No. So we know Orcs is in July, but based on, one thing I was going to mention is the real pre-orders and release date is really bizarre because there's still the Castigator tank for Sisters, which we haven't seen. That's, I think, the only thing remaining from the reveals. I thought the two infantry characters were also not out, but the lady with the the banner, I don't think she's out. The dog, I think she's not the Dogmata, but there's a priest and then the lady with the banner. I didn't see those released either. So I'm assuming those are not out either, which means there's still about three kits for sisters that are still not out. Let me just triple check that I'm not making that up. I don't see them anywhere on the sisters or on the pre-orders or on the new releases. So we still have minimum three kits for sisters to come out, 2 to 3 kits. Obviously, the earliest those are going to go on pre-order is July 3rd for a July 10th release. And I assume we're not going to get an orc book on the same day as a pre-order there, which means the earliest the orcs could go on pre-order is July 10th, which probably for a July 17th release. And we do know that they're coming out in July. I would imagine there's probably at least 2 to 3 weeks of orc releases. So just based on my assumption, I would guess we might get a Thousand Suns or Grey Knights book maybe August 14th pre-order. That's going to be my prediction. So mark that down in your calendars, and then we can check back in about 5 weeks to see if I was correct. And hopefully it's Thousand Suns first, because screw the Imperium. Or maybe they're like, maybe, or maybe it's like, because it's a battle box, maybe both codexes kind of come out simultaneously, which I'd be okay. Begrudgingly,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as far as we know.
But yeah, I think we're looking at the August for a Thousand Suns.
So we're ways down the road yet. So, yeah. And with the orc thing, aren't they releasing like the beast nagas separately and the codex is in there, and then the rest of it comes out at a later date?
Yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing. So from my understanding, and I don't know if I'm 100% correct here, but just like the sisters, when sisters originally got released, they had like that special edition battle box, which had the codex, and then like basically an army box, and then they didn't have their actual codex released for like another 2 or 3 months, even, I think, because I think that army box went on pre-order in like November or December, and then their book came out like late January or something like that, or even early February. So I'm hoping that's not the same case with orcs. I'm hoping it's like the unique army box with the codex in it, and then also the regular codex at the same time. And then the actual like models and stuff are soon to follow, maybe like the following week or 2 weeks later at the most. But at this point, I just feel like they need to get going here.
Yeah.
G-dubs, let's go.
Let's go. I just quick look. I think it's the Magafire is the banner person you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay, that is
But it's like... It's like the new one, though.
Okay. I'm looking at something else. But you're right. The Stagnator's not available yet, whatever the new tank is on the Rhino chassis. Interesting enough, like just put it, the High Priestess is already sold out. So I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah, so I think... let me see what it's called. I don't know. I'll find it, but yeah. It's basically...
Somebody will correct us, that's for sure.
Here we go. It's the so her name is Astrid Thurga. She has the banner. She's got a big banner, so she's not out. She's kind of holding the banner wrapped around her arm, and then she's the reliquant at arms basically.
Okay.
And then there's also a priest, a new plastic priest that's coming out, because I believe the existing priests are either fine cast or special edition or something like that. So
okay.
I'm not crazy, guys. There is a few.
I just make sure it was the same one, but you're right. It's a different, I was thinking a different model.
Yeah. So,
I just want to see this stuff come out. It's just ridiculous. I mean, that it's taking so long to get back up to stock. So,
yeah. And the fact that by the time the Castigator comes out, there's almost like a 4-week split between the sister's release and the last bits is interesting.
It's kind of how it used to be, though. I don't want to go back to those days, though. But anyway, so that's all that's going on there. Any other breaking news? I'm sure we will all have our hot takes on Warhammer Plus, which should be debuting in less than 48 hours. So we'll be curious to see what that's all about. And of course, additional breaking news, you can find that on our Facebook page. So once again, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And I'm Jim.
Thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.